7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Ashton Mara. The coal industry's struggle is not one unique to West Virginia, but the blame may need to be placed further back in history than President Obama.
It's kind of hard and disingenuous to say that one presidential administration has had this effect so far in 6 years. These are forces that have been going on for a while.
A Kentucky reporter discusses the presidential impact on coal coming up on West Virginia Morning. With Congress in its August recess and contentious midterm election races heating up across the state, congressional leaders are spending much of their time traveling their district, hoping to reconnect with the voters of West Virginia. Yesterday, two of those leaders spent the afternoon in Bluefield discussing the so-called war on coal with other politicians and industry leaders. The Bluefield Coal Symposium was almost like a who's who in West Virginia politics. Of the five participants, three were members of Congress. Congressman Nick Rahal and Morgan Griffith of Virginia served as panelists, and Senator Joe Manchin acted as moderator. Also on the panel were Attorney General Patrick Morrissey, West Virginia Coal Association President Bill Rainey, and Alpha Natural Resources Senior Vice President of Environmental Affairs Gene Kitts. What you get at an event like this is a conversation on a variety of energy-related issues. Panelists discussed coal sequestration, climate change, even the Export-Import Bank. What you don't get, however, is much variety in opinion. The panel's allegiance to the coal industry was unwavering. During opening remarks, Morrissey focused on the legal standing he has taken against the Environmental Protection Agency. In July, after the agency revealed new rules to lower carbon emissions from coal-fired power plants, Morrissey joined nine other state attorneys general in filing an amicus brief, saying the EPA doesn't have the authority to create such regulations.
I think that the Obama administration's ultimate goal is not to finalize this rule, but it's to ensure that the market moves away from coal. They know that this rule is really deficient, and it's likely to fall in the courts. So what they want to do is they want to cause the power plants to move over and disregard coal. We can't let that happen.
After remarks, panelists took written questions from the audience, many of which were focused on the downturn in the industry. One audience member wanted to know, of the politicians, how were they working to restore the jobs that will be lost in the coal fields as a result of the EPA's regulations? Rahal says diversification should be part of it, but at the same time, didn't want anyone to get the impression he was speaking poorly of coal. Here's part of his answer.
But in the long range, I think we have to look at our overall economic structure in southern West Virginia. Coal's number one, make no mistake about it, has been, is, always will be. We'll never turn our backs on the coal industry. But I think that should also help us to diversify our economy and have other industries in place so that we can have the retraining or other places for dislocated coal miners, however temporary it may be, to go and work.
Rahal says it's not the federal government's job to come in and diversify the economy, but they should be partners with the state and communities in doing so, something he doesn't think the administration is willing to put resources toward doing. Rainey, on the other hand, an industry leader, seemed to be on the opposite side of those retraining and diversification programs.
And everybody in Washington, I don't mean these guys, I'm not talking about our representatives up there, but I'm telling you, the bunch we have to deal with who won't talk to us, have no respect for our industry, make themselves feel better by sending retraining money down here to retrain our coal miners who are the best in the world at what they do, and they send that money down here to make themselves feel better.
From there, the conversation focused on provisions in the Affordable Care Act that provided better care for black lung patients. In regards to securing these benefits, all of the panelists, regardless of their party affiliation, say they support that cause. An audience member asked what the public could do to help fight Washington on coal regulations, and the general response was to spread the word through social media, friends, and family. Panelists also suggested members of the public should talk about the economic effects with people who live in states who don't produce coal. Overall, the rhetoric was focused on Washington as the cause of the industry's decline. Manchin closed the discussion with this statement.
In our coal industry, we've hit hard times before. This is not new to us. We've had market shifts. We've been through some tough times. We've had a lot of things happen to us in my lifetime over the years, but we've always made it through. The one factor that we never had the federal government doubling down when times got tough, making it almost impossible for us to survive. We've never been hit like this before. We've always had government so we kind of reach out and be your partner. But we can't survive if the federal government doubles down.
The event was sponsored by the Bluefield Chamber of Commerce and WVVA-TV and held on the campus of Bluefield State College. And now we turn from a symposium on all things coal to a conversation about jobs within that industry and the rhetorical battleground over the supposed war being waged against it. Erica Peterson is a former West Virginia Public Broadcasting reporter, now working at WFPL in Louisville. Last week, Peterson wrote a piece detailing the ups and downs of Kentucky's coal jobs back to the Reagan administration. Dave Mistich spoke with Peterson about that story, titled If There's a War on Coal, It Started Long Before President Obama.
You open up this piece with the sentence, why do we keep talking about a war on coal? And I think that says a lot. So I guess if you would sort of give an overview of the situation there, and then we'll sort of move into the situation in West Virginia and how that correlates.
Sure. Well, I mean, here in Kentucky and in West Virginia as well, there's a lot of talk about a war on coal from politicians, especially. And that's something that just keeps getting repeated and repeated like a broken record. So I decided to look at what the numbers actually were. And this was spurred on in part by a column that our senator here, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, sent out that quoted some numbers. It said that Kentucky coal jobs, there have been a loss of over 7,300 jobs since the year President Obama took office. But there was a gain in Kentucky coal jobs during George W. Bush's administration, about 4,200 coal jobs. And those numbers are correct. Those numbers are you know, pretty accurate. But you have to go a little bit further back to see what's really happening. And when you look at the overall trends of Kentucky coal jobs, they've been declining for a long time. I went back to 1980, and that wasn't kind of subjective. It was because that was actually around the peak, was 1980. It was going up until then, and then it started going down. And you can see that there were drops in almost every presidential administration since then, except for George W. Bush. There were a couple of jobs gained, about 4,500 jobs by my numbers gained during his administration. But during Ronald Reagan's time, there was a 36% drop in Kentucky coal jobs, H.W. Bush a 17% drop, Bill Clinton a 41% drop, and now, so far, with President Barack Obama, a 38% drop.
And I'm looking at, right in front of me, a graph from the West Virginia Office of Miners Health and Safety and Training. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, those numbers that you were dictating to me about Kentucky appear to be very similar. And in fact, West Virginia, since Barack Obama took office, has actually added 1,500 coal jobs. So I guess the question is there any reason why this is persisting? It's pretty obvious that the EPA proposed rules and the president's stance on climate change is playing a huge part. But should we continue to be having this conversation at all?
Well, I mean, I think the numbers kind of speak for themselves. And it would be inaccurate to say that none of the environmental regulations that Obama's EPA has proposed haven't affected coal jobs. They definitely have. But there have been a lot of other factors that have been working for a while against coal jobs, especially in eastern Kentucky and in West Virginia. There have been declining reserves. Their natural gas has gotten very economically competitive, things like that that have nothing to do with the environmental regulations. And I think West Virginia and eastern Kentucky are kind of in the same boat here. If you look at, I didn't put this in my story, but if you look at western Kentucky versus eastern Kentucky, western Kentucky jobs haven't declined at the same rate. They've pretty much stayed, you know, fairly flat, a couple fluctuations. So it's really something that's been going on in eastern Kentucky and into West Virginia and the Appalachian coal fields.
Senator Mitch McConnell, who is running for re-election, against Allison Grimes, who's the Secretary of State there. And from what I've read, also going the route of blasting the president on energy policy and all of that. Talk a little bit about that race. There's a very similar race going on, not necessarily with an incumbent, but Representative Shelley Moore Capito running for the seat being vacated by Senator Jay Rockefeller. Her opponent is Natalie Tennant, the Secretary of State. Talk a little bit about the parallels between those two races and sort of how the rhetoric of this war on coal is playing a part in those races.
Well, they're really pretty similar. I mean, in both states, you have Republicans who have held office. I mean, Shelley Moore Capito in the House and Mitch McConnell in the Senate, who have these very pro-coal stances. And you basically have the Democrats trying to out-coal the Republicans. And here in Kentucky, there's not a whole lot of difference in the talking points that Mitch McConnell and Allison Lindergan Grimes are spouting in coal. But, I mean, when you look at the numbers, I mean, people in the coal fields for years have been saying in both states, hey, you know, there's a problem here. And talking about how there's a war on coal is not going to help things. We need to talk about economic transition. We need to talk about diversification. And these are conversations that aren't really being had while we, sit and say, you know, Barack Obama is waging a war on coal.
Sure. And one final question for you is that, you know, a lot of these things deal with very, very specific aspects of economy and industry, but there's also a lot of nuance to this as well. What can you say to people that sort of continue in this conversation? Because it's certainly not something that's going to go away.
Yeah, I mean, I think people hear what they want to hear, you know, whatever that is. I think it would behoove people to start looking at the data and to look at historical data, especially with natural resources like coal and like natural gas. I mean, there's so many factors that affect it. It's kind of hard and disingenuous to say that one presidential administration has had this this effect, you know, so far in 6 years on an industry that has just totally tanked it. These are forces that have been going on for a while and will continue to go on. You know, analysts are saying that Appalachian coal is going to be around for a while. There's going to be coal mining, but it won't reach the peaks that it did, you know, in the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s. So this is probably going to go on no matter who's in the White House next as well.
Great, Erica. Well, thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Once again, that was WFPL's Erica Peterson speaking with Dave Mistich about the war on coal and its influence on politics in West Virginia and Kentucky. To hear more, visit our website, wvpublic.org. You're listening to West Virginia Morning on West Virginia Public Radio. It's 7:43. Mostly cloudy today with a chance of light showers, highs in the 70s. Partly cloudy tonight with lows in the 50s and 60s. For your Thursday, mostly sunny with a chance of showers in the eastern counties, highs in the 70s.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by St. John's Episcopal Church, presenting the Treasures on Earth Antique Sale August 16th, 9 to 4. At the Benny Keenum Center, Benny Keenum Temple next to the Charleston Civic Center. Details at stjohnswv.org. Support for NPR comes from the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness. On the web at melvilletrust.org.
Residents in several McDowell County communities are one step closer to clean public water. The Elkhorn Regional Water Project will replace two water systems that date back about 70 or 80 years. Officials celebrated the project with a groundbreaking ceremony yesterday. Jessica Lilly reports. A yellow backhoe knocks rocks from a mountainside as another construction vehicle drills through rock along Route 52 in Elkhorn. Work began in late June to replace the Elkhorn and Mayberry water systems. The aging, leaky Elkhorn Water Tower that sits on the other side of the road will soon be out of commission.
Our goal is to provide as much clean water as we can for every citizen of McDowell County.
That's Eldon Green. He's the assistant director of the McDowell County Public Service District.
There's a crumbling, decaying, almost non-existent water system in the area, and not even all of our households have that public water. Some have springs and wells. But as with any rural community where the major industry has come and gone, we face negative things. We face low incomes. We face dilapidated housing. And it's just been a terrible, terrible struggle.
Green says several of the systems throughout the county were built, then left by coal companies.
And essentially we became a captive workforce to big coal. And I'm not trying to be anti-coal on that, but that's essentially what happened. And now, since the bloom is off the rose, so to speak, with the coal industry, and a lot of the coal has been gone, and it being a non-renewable resource, therefore, we're faced with an exodus of a lot of our people, with a crumbling of the infrastructure that was here. It's almost non-existent today.
The Elkhorn Regional Water Project has been in the works for several years, and it was further delayed when the federal government halted abandoned mine land funding to review the applications earlier this year.
And we are very grateful for how that through the slow-moving bureaucratic process of the government, we're finally seeing this good thing happen in our county today.
Abandoned mine land money comes from a fund created by a tax on coal companies. The money is used to reclaim and fix damage left from previous mining activity. Congressman Nick Rahal says he met with officials earlier this year about the funding. Rahal attended the groundbreaking ceremony in Kimball.
These projects are really crucial for clean water for the people of southern West Virginia. And their clean water has been impacted by the previous mining of coal, which is so important to our state as well. So, we've been able to break some of these projects loose and get clean water and replace old systems in many cases so that our people can have what many in the big city just take for granted when they get up every morning. And that's clean, drinkable, accessible water. And that's what we're celebrating in Kimball today.
Phase one in Elkhorn is also funded by a grant and loan from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Rural Development. The project continues down Route 52 with two more phases. It's three of several plans in the works to bring clean water throughout the county. Green says 6 years ago, the McDowell PSD had about 500 customers. Now he's proud to say there's more than 3,000, and several other projects are in the works. The Big Sandy Rotorfield Extension will bring clean water to his own home.
Personally, right now, I have a deep well and a pump, and the water's not the greatest, but we're thankful for it. But that's generally the case all through the Tug Valley in our county here, where most folks outside of municipality have well water. Few have springs. I have a water treatment system, personally, that is salt-based, and they say over the long term that's not good. But we're thankful for what we have.
Phase one of the Elkhorn Regional Water Project will bring clean water to 200 homes. Green says the PSD plans to pay back the loan within 30 years, meaning water bills could increase about $30 a month. Phase one is expected to be complete in spring of 2015. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jessica Lilly in Elkhorn.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. You can listen to and read our stories on our website, wvpublic.org. Our director is Teresa Wills. Our news director is Beth Voorhees. I'm Ashton Mara.